The Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price. A new course for the country.
This is our historic moment.
That is our top story at noon. President Biden going right to work last night, undoing many of the things his predecessor put into action. The new president signing 17 executive orders to wipe all things Trump from the face of the earth. Victor Davis Hanson is at the Hoover Institution.
He and the Democrats took a lot of institutions that were bipartisan and wiped them out.
The newly signed orders will stop the construction of the southern border wall, put the U.S. back in the Paris Climate Accord, reverse the so-called Muslim travel ban, kill the Keystone Pipeline, and put in place a 100-day mask mandate. President Biden says that's just the start.
I'm going to start by keeping the promises I made to the American people. A long way to go. These are just executive actions. They are important, but we're going to need legislation for a lot of the things we're going to do.
The new executive orders followed a call to unity from President Biden yesterday.
Uniting our people, uniting our nation. Without unity, there is no peace. And unity is the path forward. Let's start afresh.
The actions after the speech spoke louder than the actual words that were given.
GOP strategist Ash Wright.
You know, he had his line. He said, look, I want to listen and I want to hear every American and I want to be there. But within hours after his speech, he signed sweeping executive orders that basically undid everything that half of the country had supported less than, 90 days ago.
Wright says President Biden missed a golden opportunity in his speech to reach out to conservatives who now feel they have no voice.
To address big tech and the silencing of conservative voices. And when he spoke out and he said, look, I want equal rights for all, I thought that there should also be a point in there where he said, I'll work with my buddies in big tech and these billionaires to ensure that conservative voices, even if they're opposite of what I'm trying to do, will still have a place in our country.
From big tech to big media, the mainstream media used yesterday's inauguration to get one final dig into former President Trump. Here's how they covered his departure from D.C.
A welcome sight for many Americans. President Trump is leaving Washington.
It's going to be a little pathetic, a tiny little crowd at Joint Base Andrews.
He's almost leaving town like an autocrat.
But after Joe Biden was sworn in, the presidency was once again replete with respect.
46th president of the United States, putting his soul into his first address.
His speech was so sincere.
We saw the steely determination and compassion of President Joe Biden.
And last night it was a tale of two press briefings. The media's questioning of new White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki took on a remarkably different tone.
Talk a little bit just about the preparations for getting the White House ready and safe for the new president. It's been reported that you did $500,000 worth of deep cleaning.
Do you see yourself, your primary role is promoting the interests of the president, or are you there to provide us the unvarnished truth?
Can you just give us some color about what it was like for him going into the Oval Office?
On a lighter note, will he keep Donald Trump's Air Force One color scheme change?
Those were the actual questions posed by the mainstream media last night. Former White House Communications Director Alyssa Farah.
It was a much tamer press corps than we were used to dealing with.
Farah says it's jaw-dropping to see the media drool over this administration after it treated the former administration with such disdain.
I was in the press briefing room when Kayleigh McEnany started, and one of the first questions she was asked is, will you commit to never lying to us? A fair question and something that all civil servants should commit to, but that even that level of trust, they wouldn't give her that benefit of the doubt up front. They didn't ask those kind of questions today of Jen Psaki.
For her part, Jen Psaki promised a transparent Biden administration.
His objective and his commitment is to bring transparency and truth back to government, to share the truth even when it's hard to hear.
Many pundits think Jen Psaki's role will be even more pronounced with the new president not not expected to hold that many press briefings. Violent protests breaking out last night on the West Coast following the inauguration of Joe Biden, an ICE building damaged by far-left groups in Portland, street fires set in Seattle, and American flags burned in Denver.
But, you know, Antifa doesn't exist. It's a total myth. They're only involved in peaceful protests, a talking point that to this day is still being used despite ample evidence showing quite the opposite.
Seattle radio talk show host Jason Rantz.
And the Democrats have a really interesting problem on their hand because they helped create this movement. They allowed it to fester for 6 months, and they created this environment that essentially said, look, we're not only not going to punish you for your kinds of violence that we saw for 6 months last year, we're actually going to reward it.
Rantz says in the end, Democrats have to be consistent to stop further violence.
It's only going to continue. Mm-hmm. So the Democrats have to step up and actually call this stuff out. You can't just go after one side of violence. You can't just go after the violence that you think is being perpetuated by the right and completely ignore the left. It begets more violence.
8 arrests were made last night in Portland and Seattle after several buildings were vandalized. Today was Joe Biden's first full day in office and his emphasis squarely on COVID. The new president has a goal of getting 100 million doses of COVID vaccine into the arms of 100 million Americans within the next 100 days. Amazon says it can help distribute the shot. Fox News medical correspondent Dr. Mark Siegel wonders where this offer of assistance was during the Trump administration.
Operation Warp Speed has done what it was supposed to do. It's brought these vaccines to market. They're out there. They're sending them out there. The problem has been on the other end, getting it into people's arms. All of that could have been helped by Amazon, and it's a disgrace that it's taken so long and that it seems to be political.
Siegel says if Amazon had offered to help distribute the shot when it was first available, tens of thousands of lives might have been saved. The COVID-19 vaccine rollout in this country started a month ago. President Biden's first cabinet pick has been approved by the Senate.
On this vote, the yeas are 84, the nays are 10. The nomination is confirmed.
Avril Haines has now become the country's first female director of national intelligence. Still to come this Thursday, military helicopter crash in Mendon, found safe and sound in Alabama, and the return to school in Buffalo.
Good afternoon. We're going to be going back into lake effect mode over the next couple of days and nights. I'll be back with the forecast coming up in 10 minutes.
Okay, Kevin Williams, checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania this Thursday, January 21st. Three National Guard members on a training flight were killed last night when their helicopter crashed in a farmer's field in Mendon, New York, near Rochester.
This is a burden. This is a heavy, heavy burden upon all of us. These are our freedom providers. And again, just showing again that the freedom is not free. We lost three great Americans today.
Monroe County Sheriff Todd Baxter says the Black Hawk chopper went down around 6:30 last night during a training exercise. These folks heard, then felt the explosion.
It got louder and louder, and then all of a sudden there was an explosion. And I said to my wife, I said, yeah, there's a helicopter just went down.
It legitimately was shaking the ground. Thought a car hit my house.
The cause of the crash still under investigation this afternoon. They've been found safe and sound.
I'm proud to announce that we have safely located Dimitri and Shakira Cash. They are in police custody tonight and in no further danger.
Greece, New York Police Chief Andrew Forsyth says the 3 and 5-year-olds were found in a rental car with a blanket over their heads, thousands of miles away in Montgomery, Alabama.
You can imagine, right? They're being secreted under a blanket on the floorboard of a vehicle. So what does that speak to the people that are responsible for this? And so I would imagine that they are upset. But Charlie said they're watching cartoons and eating chicken nuggets, so maybe they're more resilient than we give them credit for.
Police say they were able to track the kids to Alabama through a rental vehicle. A woman now in police custody with more arrests pending. Authorities say the children were abducted from their foster home Monday night in Greece, New York. The 22-year-old woman from Harrisburg accused of stealing House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's laptop during the riots this month at the Capitol has now been ordered ordered to home confinement pending further legal action. Federal investigators say Riley Williams stole the computer and planned on selling it to Russia's intelligence service. The legal fight over New York's contested 22nd congressional seat has taken yet another turn. A state Supreme Court judge has ordered the Oneida County Board of Elections to count more than 1,000 disputed ballots in that race between Democratic incumbent Anthony Brindisi and Republican challenger Claudia Tenney. Before the legal fight began, Tenney was in the lead by just 29 votes. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the state is a couple days away from running out of COVID vaccine.
We have more of a distribution network than we have product, so to speak.
The governor telling vaccine providers to hold off on making appointments unless they know they can meet the demand.
We don't know what we're going to get next week. And we don't know where we're going to distribute it next week. So don't schedule an appointment.
Cuomo says Johnson & Johnson could be closer to having its vaccine approved, which would increase the available supply. New York Republicans trying to curtail Governor Cuomo's emergency pandemic powers. Since the spring of last year, the governor has issued dozens of executive orders allowing the change of state laws and the implementation of new rules without legislative approval. State Senator Tom O'Meara tried to rein in those unchecked powers with legislation yesterday, but it was shot down on a party line vote. Cuomo's emergency authority, which was granted to him last March by the state legislature, extends until this April. Media coverage of Governor Cuomo's daily pandemic press briefings has provided a big boost to the Democrats' campaign war chest. Here's Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
Campaign filings show the governor raised more than $4 million over the past 6 months. The governor, who's in position to run for a fourth term next year, has nearly $17 million in cash on hand, which could be just enough to discourage any potential challengers, while the state Republican Party only has about $211,000. The governor gained national attention for his daily televised pandemic briefings and took in more small-dollar donations than usual from people all around the country. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Thank you, Jeremy. It's been nearly a year since students in Buffalo have been in a classroom because of the pandemic. Last night, the school board voted unanimously to start sending the kids back to class in stages. That return to school will start Monday, February 1st in the Queen City. Well, if you have any questions about the Biden administration and its agenda going forward, well, tonight's the night to get those questions answered.
Tonight, exclusively on mytwintears.com, the topic will be President Joe Biden, the next 4 years, and America's future.
Dr. Steve Coleman will host the Cybercast from 7 to 9 tonight.
I have the best political experts in the region, in Pennsylvania and New York, all on mytwintears.com. It's going to be, I think, a humdinger of a political forum.
If you have any questions you want answered, you can contact Dr. Stephen Coleman on Facebook and leave your comments or questions for tonight's Cybercast. Again, that'll run from 7 to 9 tonight on mytwintears.com. Leave it to an upstate New York zoo to have a unique colored kangaroo. Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
A newborn kangaroo has an unusual look. Joey is a red kangaroo recently born at the Animal Adventure Park near Binghamton. Last week, the marsupial was given a medical inspection when it was discovered he had all-white fur. The zoo says it's rare and believes the snow-colored coat comes from leucism, a condition causing partial pigmentation loss. The zoo has shared photos of Joey on its social media pages. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. Let's pause for sports. Sunny time. Your two-minute drill.
Yeah, let's start in Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes has no symptoms from the hit this past weekend that knocked him out of the game against the Cleveland Browns, but he remains in concussion protocol. The Chiefs quarterback participated in a light practice yesterday. He's also reportedly dealing with a foot injury as the defending Super Bowl champions get ready for Sunday's AFC Championship game against the Buffalo Bills. Phillip Rivers is calling it a career. The Colts quarterback's 17-year career, one of the most prolific in league history, Rivers played for the Los Angeles and San Diego Chargers for 16 seasons. Of course, he finished off his career in Indianapolis last year. He ranks fifth in NFL history with 63,440 yards passing. The eight-time all-time Pro Bowler, also fifth all-time in touchdown passes with 421. In the NBA, Kyrie Irving returns to the Brooklyn Nets. He scored 37 points. Kevin Durant had 38. James Harden had a triple-double. Yet they fall to Colin Sexton and the Cleveland Cavaliers in double overtime, 147 to 135. Sexton had 22 points between overtime and double overtime to finish with a career-high 42 points in the win. That impressed Cavs coach J.B. Bickerstaff.
If you think about a kid who hasn't played in a while, but what Colin has proven time and time again against all his doubters is that he's not afraid of the big moments.
Cleveland improves to 7-7 on the year. Meanwhile, Brooklyn just ran out of gas, as head coach Steve Nash.
You know, up three after the first over, at the end of the first overtime, and gave up the three, and looks like the legs fell off a little bit.
The Nets fall to 9-7. In Philadelphia, the 76ers improved to 10-5 behind Joel Embiid's 42 points and 10 rebounds. Sixers beat the Celtics 117-109. Toronto falls to the Heat 111-102. Maple Leafs lose to Edmonton on the ice 3-1. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphiet.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Thursday edition of the Noon Report, the latest on that military helicopter crash in Mendon, New York, a new president and a new tone from the mainstream media, and a long-standing White House tradition continues.
How did Christianity go from being a backwoods, small, little religious sect to the dominant force in all of human history? The answer might be more simple than you think. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Chuck Colson liked to say that the kingdom of God will never arrive on Air Force One. That's still true. Any reprieve the last few years in areas of religious liberty or the sanctity of life is probably coming to an end. And recent events should make the truth of Chuck's statement even more obvious to us. Whether politics are indeed upstream or downstream from culture, probably the answer is both, it's not the vehicle for lasting cultural change. In fact, the history of Christianity shows that lasting cultural change rarely comes about in the ways that we expect. Christian influence requires that Christians cultivate virtue in both our private and public lives. A virtue that once changed the world might surprise you. Patience. In his book, The Patient Ferment of the Early Church, the late Mennonite historian Alan Kreider explained Christianity's extraordinary rise from a beleaguered sect to the movement that transformed the Roman Empire. As one reviewer of Kreider's book put it, Christianity probably shouldn't exist. Not only did its Roman contemporaries hate the church, but Christians didn't make it so easy to join up. With a stringent moral code and an extended period of catechesis prior to baptism, which only happened once a year around Easter, well, the church just wasn't very seeker-friendly. And still, it grew. Why? Well, surprisingly, it wasn't because of an emphasis on evangelism, public preaching, or other missionary activities. The early church fathers seldom wrote about those subjects. Now, perhaps because they didn't need to. But what they did emphasize was patience, which Kreider defined as, quote, not controlling events, not anxious or in a hurry, and never using force to achieve ends. Now, if this sounds like a boring and timid church growth strategy, it wasn't. See, in the ancient world, patience was a trait associated with subordinates, slaves, victims. People at the bottom of the social hierarchy were expected to be patient, but not those at the top. By emphasizing patience to all, the church fathers mobilized early Christians to be profoundly countercultural. Christians ran toward the plague when others ran away from it. Christians didn't kill their children, and they even adopted children left out to die. They treated their spouses and children with love and respect, while in the larger culture, families were treated as little more than household slaves. At the Colson Center's Truth Love Together virtual event conference last year, Andy Crouch marvelously described the patient ferment of the early church. As he put it, the neighbors noticed and asked Christians to give an account for the hope that was within them. I'll link you to Crouch's outstanding presentation at breakpoint.org. As a result, the church grew from being a persecuted sect numbering in the thousands at the end of the first century to half the empire by the start of the fourth. The patient ferment of the early church eventually transformed the world. Now, as Crouch goes on to put it, instead of fermentation, we often prefer carbonation, hoping that a quick shot of power or a quick new clever church growth method could do the trick. What ends up happening is there might be some fizz, but the effects are largely short-lived. What the early church fathers understood is that long-lasting change requires long-lasting effort. In fact, a prime example of cultural fermentation is, of course, British parliamentarian William Wilberforce. Wilberforce and his committed band of Christian co-laborers worked for decades to abolish the slave trade and restore virtue across the British Empire. Yet neither he nor his children lived to see the full fruit of their labors. Why would we expect things to be different for us? Why would we be exempt from the need for patience? We're not, of course. And to think otherwise is to confuse carbonation for fermentation. We're Air Force One for the Second Coming. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street.
The weekend almost here.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Another push of cold air will be returning us to a lake effect pattern as we move through the next couple days and nights. Areas east and southeast of the lakes will be prone to several inches of fresh fluff. The call for this afternoon is mainly cloudy with a brisk wind, a few flurries around, temperatures peaking in the 30s to near 40. Brisk and colder tonight and tomorrow. Now, outside of lake effect, we'll find variable cloudiness and some snow flurries, but several inches of snow will fall and more persistent lake snow bands east and southeast of Lakes Erie and Ontario. Low tonight, 20s, and the high tomorrow in the 30s. Saturday's a cold day with sunshine, flurries, and local lake snow, and a high temperature in the 20s.
All right, Kevin Williams, a lot to consider there. Thank you. If you're just joining us, here's some of the stories we're following for you today. Thursday, January 21st, a military helicopter crash last night in Mendon, New York, near Rochester, claiming the lives of three National Guard members.
I think we've proven again that freedom is not free with this horrific crash that occurred here in the town of Mendon.
Monroe County Sheriff Todd Baxter says the Black Hawk helicopter went down around 6:30 last night in a farmer's field following a routine training exercise by the National Guard. Governor Cuomo ordering all flags on state buildings to fly at half-staff today in honor of the victims. Thousands of miles away, hidden under blankets on the floor of a car, two children who were abducted from their foster home Monday night in Greece, New York, were found safe and sound. Three-year-old Shakiria Cash and five-year-old Dimitri Cash, located in Montgomery, Alabama.
Well, this is the best outcome that we could ask for in this investigation. It is far from over. Every person responsible for this abduction will be sought and apprehended. They will be held accountable for what they did.
Greece, New York Police Chief Andrew Forsyth says a woman is in custody. More arrests are pending. Authorities say the children were taken by force from their foster home by two men who used duct tape to restrain the others inside that home. The party's over. Now the work begins for President Biden. Today he'll tackle the coronavirus by signing even more executive orders. Correspondent Cammy McCormick.
President Biden's plans include expanding testing and vaccine availability, using the Defense Production Act to do that, and reopening a majority of schools in the next 100 days. The administration also hopes to set up vaccine centers at stadiums and mobilize federal personnel to help administer shots. Until now, that's been left up to the states.
Cammy McCormick reporting President Biden will sign 10 executive orders today aimed at controlling the pandemic. The kitty gloves are on again for much of the mainstream media. Now that Biden is in the White House,
I don't really hold out much hope that a very incurious media is going to change their tune. You could say that Joe Biden won the election because of the censorship and the favorable reporting that he received.
New York Post columnist Miranda Devine says reporters have now become cheerleaders for President Biden. That was on full display yesterday.
46th president of the United States putting his soul into his first address.
The speech was so sincere.
We saw the steely determination and compassion of President Joe Biden.
In the meantime, the call from the far left for the deprogramming of President Trump's supporters continues. Here was former Obama administration official Ben Rhodes on MSNBC.
The other issue of Homeland Security, yes, there's a security issue. How do you identify armed militias who are intent on doing harm? But there's a broader societal issue that is going to take many years to detox the disinformation, the lies, the hate that has been spread. A whole segment of the American population has been radicalized by what has happened over the last 4 years.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy says President Biden can bind the country's deep political wounds by denouncing the impeachment trial of his predecessor, Donald Trump.
I think impeachment is totally wrong. It was purely politically driven, and now President Trump is a private citizen. Why would you spend your time on this? This is where I think President Joe Biden could have shown the nation he really was uniting. Remember in his speech yesterday, for those who did not vote for him, give him a chance? Well, I think the best chance he'd have right now is say, let's not do impeachment.
Last night, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said the administration is staying out of the issue. Violent protests breaking out last night in Portland, Seattle, and Denver following the inauguration. The far-left groups damaging federal buildings, setting street fires, and burning American flags.
These mobs that we see on the streets of Seattle and Portland and Denver that represent Antifa, which I guess maybe is not just an idea, some Democrats have said, ultimately what they want is to overthrow America. They hate America. They're not rampaging in the streets because Joe Biden is president. They weren't doing it last summer because Donald Trump was president. They're doing it because they hate America.
Arkansas Republican Senator Tom Cotton, Valerie Carson, the police spokeswoman in Seattle.
We've had multiple sites that have been vandalized, but once things start to get destructive and property starts being damaged, that is usually when we will step in and try and make arrests.
And police said they made 8 arrests last night. COVID-19 vaccine in short supply across these United States.
Double, triple what you're sending us. We're ready.
Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan says he could vaccinate the entire Motor City in 3 months, but he's just not getting enough vaccine to do that.
We could handle 25,000 vaccinations a week. Right now, we're scheduling 6,000.
Both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines require 2 shots, and to make sure they have that second shot set aside, many officials are halting new vaccinations. Coming up on 26 minutes past the hour, you're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
This is Faith Under Fire. Each Thursday on Family Life, we give voice to religious battlegrounds in this nation. I'm your host, Tracy Lynn. With us today, Katie Glenn, Government Affairs Counsel for Americans United for Life. Katie, your group based in Washington, D.C., has ranked these 50 states on life issues in the life list for 2021. Which state came out on top?
Well, this year, we were really excited to have a new number one. It's Arkansas. Last year, it was Louisiana. Arkansas got that top spot. The lawmakers there have been so focused. They've been relentless on passing life-affirming laws from fertilization all the way to natural death that we do cover at Americans United for Life. And in 2019, Arkansas lawmakers passed 10 pro-life laws. So when you're working that hard and doing that much, it's hard to not eventually end up on top of the list.
Did Pennsylvania or New York happen to make it among the top 20 on the life list?
They did not. Pennsylvania is number 23. Primarily that is because of laws that were passed 10 to 15 years ago. They had some really great bipartisan pro-life lawmakers. You know, the Pennsylvania legislature, they did pass a Down syndrome abortion prohibition bill last year, but Governor Wolf is vetoing everything, so it makes it tough. And New York is falling on the list. They made number 45 this year, in large part because of the omnibus bill that they did last year, where they stripped out a lot of pro-life laws.
Yeah, and the law called the Reproductive Health Act passed in January 2019, and that legalized all abortions up to 24 weeks of gestation. And beyond that, abortion was even deemed legal if the woman's, quote, health or life are at risk. New York gained national attention with all of that. There was celebration to the horror of many of us, and certain buildings were lit up when that bill became law.
It definitely was a statement by New York lawmakers that not only do they support and celebrate abortion, but they rolled back health and safety laws, those protections that have nothing to do with the actual ability to obtain an abortion, but are really about making sure that women are receiving adequate medical care. They rolled those back as part of the Reproductive Health Act. So it's like more than just being pro-abortion. It's about going further than that and really repealing laws that were passed to protect women's health and safety.
On the national front, Joe Biden has selected abortion advocate Xavier Becerra to be the next Health and Human Services Secretary. He was a member of the U.S. House representing downtown L.A. for several years. So there's a clear trail of his voting record when it comes to abortion support.
As the Attorney General of the state of California, he has actively pursued and prosecuted pro-lifers. He has been very involved in prosecuting David Daleiden, who was the whistleblower about Planned Parenthood selling fetal baby parts. He was involved with a lawsuit suing NIFLA, the pregnancy care centers, requiring them to provide information about where to get an abortion when it's against their mission. He lost in the Supreme Court. So he's made it clear that he's willing to use the force of government to go after pro-lifers who oppose expansion of abortion.
Katie, on a grassroots level, how can we, the folks who value life in its many forms, make a positive difference in our own neighborhoods?
You know, I think this is the most important thing. We can pass all the laws in the world, but we need to have a life-affirming culture. So supporting local community groups, whether it's a pregnancy care center in your neighborhood or a nursing home, affirming life doesn't just mean opposing abortion. Calling your lawmakers at the state level and at the federal level and letting them know why it's so important that our laws and our government is saying you can do it to women, supporting them in raising their babies, because ultimately we need to have a world where abortion is not just illegal, it's unthinkable.
That's Katie Glenn with Americans United for Life. I'm Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
Thank you, guys. Faith Under Fire comes your way every Thursday during the Noon Report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Another push of cold air will be returning us to a lake effect pattern as we move through the next couple days and nights. Areas east and southeast of the lakes will be prone to several inches of fresh fluff. The call for this afternoon is mainly cloudy with a brisk wind, a few flurries around, temperatures peaking in the 30s to near 40. Brisk and colder tonight and tomorrow. Now, outside of lake effect, we'll find variable cloudiness and some snow flurries, but several inches of snow will fall and more persistent lake snow bands east and southeast of Lakes Erie and Ontario. Low tonight, 20s, and the high tomorrow in the 30s. Saturday's a cold day with sunshine, flurries, and local lake snow, and a high temperature in the 20s.
All right, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. Finally at noon, even though they left on a chilly note, former President Trump and current President Biden did share one good moment together. Mr. Trump carrying on a long-standing tradition of leaving a letter for his successor on the Resolute desk inside the Oval Office. President Biden mentioned that letter last night and said it was, quote, generous. What I wouldn't give to be able to read that letter. And that is the world we live in this Thursday. As always, thanks for coming along. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.